The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
I know it's KKFN and KKFN HD1 Long Run Denver. I know it is time to go!
Conference shot blocked by Hedman. Seven all wins. Shot and a goal. The captain, Gabriel Landeskog, with his second of the night, both on the power play. And the Avalanche, back within one.
What will you need to see from him to make the decision?
Well, if he can do all the functions he's feeling comfortable with it, then I mean, he's a guy that we put back in. He's been skating, and legs feel good. You know, just been managing.
It is the Fans Mission 16W pregame show. 1 hour and change until puck drop. Matt Smith and Sean Drotar here with you. Getting ready for a massive game four between the Avs and Lightning. And it's a shot at redemption for the Avalanche. The news of the day, it'll be Darcy Kuemper in net, and Nazem Kadri is expected to play tonight as well for the Avalanche, making his long-awaited return following the exit. What was that, game three, Sean, in Edmonton, I want to say? That was the first game in Edmonton, right?
That's right. It's actually, when you consider the games missing, man, pretty brief absence all told, especially given the surgery. Now, he's not going to take face-offs, as you would expect. It's going to be hard to protect that area of the hand and that thumb area. So it'll be interesting to see what he's capable of doing. But with Andre Burakovsky still out, still being in Denver, skating a little bit today, but in Denver, certainly not playing tonight, the team missed one of the two. I think they missed Burakovsky more than they missed Kadri, quite frankly, in their Game 3 loss. But you miss them both. Look, the lines get a little wacky, right? And you want to make sure you stabilize these lines, get the rotations the way you like them. So if you're Jared Bednar, having Nazem Kadri back in any capacity, even if he is less than 100%, which he most certainly will be, is going to be an advantage, really, for the rest of the team. Not even the emotional lift or anything like that, but the fact that you don't have to be mixing and matching guys that aren't ordinarily playing together on the same lines. And that's tremendously helpful, especially in a game where you do need a bounce back after a bad loss.
Okay, this is a fascinating topic that just came across my timeline here. Expected goals in the Stanley Cup Final, Landeskog at a 2.94, MacKinnon 1.90, Nichushkin 1.53, Palat 1.34, Makar 1.34. Landeskog at a 2.94 has 3 goals. Nichushkin at a 1.53, 3 goals. Palat and Makar both at 1.34, 2 goals. The only one in the top 5 in expected goals in the Stanley Cup Final is MacKinnon at 1.90, and that's 0 goals. That's because he's getting chances. He's getting opportunities. He just hasn't converted yet, Sean. And maybe we should start there with Nathan MacKinnon as far as what you're seeing from him in this series so far.
Well, I'd be concerned about Nathan MacKinnon's production if he wasn't doing all the things he needs to do to play well. The shots are there. He led the team in shots in Game 3. He doesn't look tentative. When he is shooting, he's not missing the net or anything like that. So that just tells me, look, this is one of those deals. You're facing off against a very, very good goaltender whose focus is clearly going to be on MacKinnon. The defense is going to focus on MacKinnon. And we had this at the beginning of the season. If you remember when McKinnon played at the beginning of the year. He had a shot percentage of like 6% or something like that for about the first 6 weeks of the season.
Right.
Everyone wondered what happened, and the thing is, nothing happened. It just haven't had a little bit of luck. When you're hitting the net, when they're getting saved, that's life. I'm not worried about McKinnon. I'd be worried if he was being tentative, which obviously he's not.
Right.
I'd be worried if he was completely missing the net. He's not. He's also handing out the helpers. He has two assists in three games. It would have been three, except Nichushkin's game-opening goal in Game 3 was waved off.
Yep.
So he's still being productive. His line is still scoring. I'm not concerned about it. I think it will come due. And quite frankly, I know it's irritating to Nathan McKinnon to not have that goal. And quite frankly, he plays better angry. So this might be the game for Nathan McKinnon to break out.
Now that it's just you and I, let's revisit the conversation that we had last night as far as Kemper and Francois. That's a tough conversation to have with three people, Sean, at the same time. So I think we know now it's Darcy. And like I said last night, you know, like I've said throughout this afternoon, I've got no problem with it, right? Either way, it wasn't a choice that I would have made. But since you felt the opposite that Sandy and I did last night, just kind of make the argument for Darcy, and again, I'm just curious because reasonable minds can disagree here.
Right, and obviously in Jared Bednar's case, he's a guy that feels that Kemper's his starter. For me, it's not a surprise because every opportunity that Jared Bednar has had to make a clean break from Darcy Kemper to Pavel Francouz, he's never taken it. All season long, he's never taken it. Look, you had an opportunity to move away from him, start the Stanley Cup Finals with Francouz in net after he won you the final three in your Western Conference Finals. He won the final three games. Why would you even consider going away from Francouz if you're really about the hot hand? Well, the trick is he isn't really about the hot hand. That's the deal. Bednar hasn't really truly been about the hot hand. He's made it very clear by actions and even, quite frankly, even with words, if you get past the coach speak of trying to play coy when you can actually play with who might be your starting goaltender. Every time he's had a choice to make, he's chosen Kemper. He went to him at the beginning of the series. I don't see any single reason why he was going to move away from him. I understand why a lot of fans may prefer Francouz. Who knows? It may be that Francouz may be the right choice, but I am not surprised that Kemper is Bednar's choice, but I will give you that. You gave the expected goals numbers, right?
Right.
For the first two games. I have those for the goaltender.
Oh, perfect.
Now, Pavel Francouz leads all goaltenders, of course, small sample size, in a .44 saves over expected. So, more or less average.
All goaltenders in the playoffs?
In just the Stanley Cup Finals.
Just these.
And obviously, Francouz, we have half a game, basically.
Right.
Vasilevsky is 0.09. In other words, one really good game, one really bad game on the whole. He's been average. Darcy Kemper is minus 1.04. So he's allowed one goal more than an average goaltender would allow. And yes, there are reasons to be concerned about the way Kemper has played. I understand that. But Jared Bednar is not a guy that overreacts now. Remember, last year, when they lost in that series to Vegas, one of the major mistakes that Bednar made was going away, splitting up his lines too early, kind of, if not panicking, perhaps overreacting to the way Vegas had played them, moving away from his lines, tinkering too much, and that cost him the series. Now, it's not as if Bednar was out on the ice, but it contributed. He learned a lesson from that, much as his players have learned lessons from this, and he's not going to go out there and just change goaltenders willy-nilly. He understands it was a bad game by Kemper. Kemper also had a shutout, and everyone can, you know, look at that and diminish it any way you'd like. He had a shutout in the Stanley Cup Finals, and if you're Jared Bednar, you're looking at that too. So you're 2-1. You're going to take a 2-1 lead. You're going to roll with Darcy Kemper. The leash is probably shorter, to be sure. But I think Bednar's the kind of guy that if he's going to make a change in goaltending, he doesn't intend to change it back, which means he's going to give Kemper every single chance to succeed until he proves that he cannot.
Yeah, and again, like I said, it was as expected. And I think that there are arguments to be made for both, certainly. And like I said, you've got to go with what you feel is the right thing. And obviously there was more that contributed to them losing last year, but I don't think it's an egregious decision, Sean, right? You talked about, you know, the concept of the hot hand. I don't know that I would even call Frankie the hot hand. He's like the lukewarm hand. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so because you don't have such a large margin between these guys, I don't think you can fault him for going with one over the other. Like I said, in my opinion, I feel more comfortable with what I have seen from Pavel Francouz while still recognizing, Sean, he is who he is, right? He is a backup in this league. There's a reason why his new contract was for, what, $2 million a year? He's right. Not getting starter money. We know who he is. The problem is, and I think Mike Evans put it perfectly the other day, and I don't know if you were there. Maybe it was the war room. Maybe it was the war room. The biggest question we had outside of depth scoring at the beginning of the season was, is Darcy Kuemper good enough to win a cup? Well, it's game four of the Stanley Cup final, and we're really still asking the same question. And if we still have to ask that question, don't we know the answer?
Well, it's the wrong question to ask, Matt, really, because the two goaltenders you have are somewhat similar in talent. I argue that if they're both 100% healthy, Kuemper is the better goalie, but I don't think it's by very much. I think these guys are both average goaltenders and at their very best, maybe sort of a B-minus type of goaltender. But it's the wrong question. The Avalanche knew that they weren't going to win a Stanley Cup on the backs of their goaltenders. Either one, at any point, they knew that. This team is designed to work around the goaltenders. Here, let me give you a football analogy, if that kind of helps a lot of folks that are trying to kind of figure out how all this all works. If you are a football team and you're facing the Kansas City Chiefs, and you know you don't have speed in the secondary, well, what do? Do you go, well, I just hope Mahomes doesn't try to go over the top very often? Well, that's not going to work. No, you scheme around it. You try to make the other team do something else. You do something else in order to make sure that your best players can succeed with what they can do instead of worrying about putting guys in positions to do something that you know they can't do. This Avalanche squad, with four different lines that could score, three in particular, and an opportunistic checking line, with four quality point getters in the blue lines, it's built to get around the goaltender. This is a team meant to outshoot and outscore. Now, can you do that? I don't know. We'll find out. It has happened in the past. It doesn't happen often. Most teams' formula is get a top-tier goaltender and ride the hot guy to the finals. But the Avs don't have that option. That guy isn't on their roster. So what they have to do is make sure that they are outshooting Tampa Bay by probably double digits, 10 to 12 shots at bare minimum, every single night, and that, in theory, would counteract the difference in save percentage between the two goaltenders and allow the Avs to get a win. It's important to note that if you actually look at that Game 3 loss, we looked at those expected goals there. In that Game 3 loss for the Avs, if Vasilevskiy had had an average game and if Kuemper had had an average game, the Avs might have won 5-4. That's how different the goaltending could be. But Vasilevskiy was great. I counted four at least, and maybe even five goals that should have gone in and would have gone in an average case. I know how good Vasilevskiy is. This guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the most clutch playoff performers in history. But you might have seen him at his very, very best. So if the Avs continue to score, they continue to press the issue, make sure they don't over-pursue, because we will get in to the situation with the defense and what changed between Game 2 and Game 3, I'm sure. But if they focus on those things, focus on what they're doing, asking the question about the goaltender is the wrong question. Because if the Avs win this Stanley Cup, they're not going to say it was Darcy Kuemper or it was Pavel Francouz. Neither one of those guys are going to be the reason the Avs won a cup. Arguably, the Avs are going to win a cup despite one or maybe even both of them. And they knew that coming in. If this was something that we're now just making a change because of injuries and going, now what do you do? That's different. Joe Sakic and Jared Bednar knew that's what this team was on day one. They've built around it, schemed around it, coached around it. Now it's time for the rubber to hit the road.
Yeah, you know, I think part of that, I would agree with the majority, and I would agree with the sentiment. I would say that I don't know if they're necessarily built around it, but they built such a good team and they focused on other areas. And, you know, Marilat put out this article that it's, you know, the $1 million house and linoleum floors and goaltending. But the thing is they gave up a high price prospect and a first round pick to go get the guy. You know, that's what they paid for them. So while it may be linoleum floors, they paid hardwood floor prices. You know, so really, I push back on that concept a little bit, because the truth is here, Sean, is they were trying to make it work with a stopgap, right? There wasn't really a great option on the market, and that's right. Why they brought in Darcy Kuemper. Now, we saw it last year with Grubauer. Grubauer was a Vezina finalist last year. Well, Darcy Kuemper had one of his best seasons ever. In fact, his best season ever. Wins, shutouts. I mean, you go down the list. I think maybe save percentage at the end, regular season, was like .925. The point here is that whoever you put behind this defense is going to be better than they were on a different team, because this team, A, plays much better defensively, and their puck possession and pace is way faster and typically way better. Now, in Game 3, their puck possession was not what it was in Game 2, Sean. Part of that was because of how Tampa adjusted to deal with the Avalanche. In Games 1 and 2, Tampa really struggled to get out on the break, and they were trying to make passes and break from their own zone. That didn't work at all. The Avs were right on them on the forecheck, forced quick decisions and bad passes that led to turnovers. I think of the Rantanen to Nichushkin play, where Nichushkin scores his second goal, Game 2, coming down the slot. That's just one example. In Game 3, the adjustment Tampa made was to counteract Colorado's offensive zone defensive mentality, meaning they like to pinch their D down the boards. That's why you'll see Josh Manson and Cale Makar and Devon Taves and Bo Byram constantly involved in the action, because Colorado does such a good job at keeping glued to the wall, right, and stopping the puck from coming out of the zone. Well, in Game 3, Tampa just said, well, screw that. We're going to flip it down the ice and create puck races and puck battles. And Tampa played harder and outworked Colorado. What that does, Sean, when you start flipping the puck out of the zone instead of trying to break it out, passing tape to tape and hitting the defense, hitting your outlet and your forward, and you're gone. What happens, Sean, is in creating those puck races, not only do you put a ton of pressure on opposing defenses if they're playing aggressive, you put a ton of pressure on opposing forwards to back check. Because typically, if the defense is pinching, then the forwards are deep in the zone. So that means with that puck race, you're skating way further and way more frequently, because you're not able to reload the possession and keep things alive and get second chance opportunities. And as a result, Tampa did a great job of not only winning those puck battles, but if Colorado won them, get there, hit them hard on the boards, get the puck off, and then start. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Colorado counteracts that, because typically the Avs love to snap the puck around the zone. But if Tampa is constantly taking any bad pass or taking any opportunity to dump the puck down to the other end of the ice and say, fine, icing, we don't care. That's why, I don't know if you saw on social media, there were a ton of people in the beginning of that game was like, well, Tampa's really good at icing. The reason Tampa was really good at icing is that was part of the plan.
Right, exactly. And there is going to be an adjustment there. There will be adjustments to the adjustments. Now it gets interesting, because you've seen these teams a couple times, even though both of the last two have been blowouts. There's enough there to kind of get an idea of what each team is good at and what each team is not good at. And obviously, they're pretty good at most things. But there are differences between these two clubs that I think you can't adjust for. The Avalanche cannot make their goaltending at any point pull even to Tampa Bay's goaltending. They can't. The roster just doesn't allow it. The Lightning don't have the ability to hang with the overall team speed of the Avalanche. Some of them do, sure. But overall team speed, no, they can't. So what you're describing here in many cases is Tampa trying to neutralize the team speed and making sure that it doesn't give them the opportunity to counterpunch, get the odd man rushes that can be difference makers. The Avs know it's coming now. They also know when it comes to playing defense, they have to be more diligent, especially with Kuemper and Net, of keeping guys out of the slot. In the first three games of this series, Tampa Bay has gotten a higher percentage of shots from the slot than in any of its previous playoff series. And not by a little, by a lot. More than 50% as many. And that even includes the fact they virtually didn't get any in Game 2. The breakdown that happened in Game 3 cannot happen again, because it has to do with the goaltender. Kuemper is a goaltender that cuts off angles. He uses that big frame. You want, if you're defending in front of Kuemper, to push guys to the outside, make them have to take that angle, somehow go across his body, let him shut that down. But he's not a guy that's nimble going post to post. He's 6'5". Now, Francois is that guy. He's the water bug, skipping back and forth from side to side, sometimes even knocking himself out of the net. That happens as well, too. We can't go with this narrative that Kemper has these issues when it comes to close-up shots and the fact that Francois doesn't. Francois puts himself completely out of the net 2 to 3 times a game. So the difference here is if you are going to allow shots in the slot, you're making it hard on any goaltender.
No doubt.
But you're making it especially hard on Darcy Kemper. It's another one of those situations where you need to put players, especially when they're not Cale Makar or Nathan MacKinnon, who can do just about anything, you have to put them in a position to do what they can do best and minimize the amount of time they're doing what they don't do best. For Kemper, that means allow him to basically put his side up to one of those posts, cut that angle off, make sure no one has anything to shoot at. That's critical. The Avs did not do it for whatever reason in Game 3. If they don't do it tonight, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't see the same result as far as wins and losses. I don't think you'll see 6 goals, but it will be tough for the Avs to win if they continue to allow those shots in that point-blank range. It's worth the defenseman maybe being a little bit less aggressive, even though that's what the Avs do, to make sure in the early going especially, so the Avs can maybe get a lead and put the pressure on Tampa Bay to make sure that they focus on that defense, especially in that opening period.
See, that yeah, I hear you. That is a little tough. Thanks to our listeners in Denver for making 104.3 The Fan a part of your day. I think that is a little tough because as far as high-danger passes, that's kind of what Tampa wants to do, is I think they were 3rd in the league this year at high-danger passes. What that means is passes through the middle to high-danger chances, right, into vulnerable positions. And I think what's so interesting about that is Colorado's done a very good job all postseason long keeping the crease clear, right? Because they know who they have behind them. They do have to be more diligent. The problem is, Sean, is if you're not aggressive defensively against this Tampa team, you allow them to wait you out. And specifically on the power play, Tampa doesn't want to go fast. Tampa wants to wait you out and make you come play the puck and then find openings off of that and like a, you know, tiger laying in the weeds, then sink their teeth in once you're out of position, which we saw them do several times. But for the Avs, I think it's really important, and I think this is all wrapped into one. If your work ethic is better, Sean, then you get your neutral zone forecheck going, which prevents Tampa from entering on the rush and creating rush opportunities. I think 4 of the first 5 goals for Tampa were off of the rush. That can never happen. Colorado really can't allow that to happen. The Avs are a much, much better rush defense team than they showed it in Game 3. So I expect a much better effort from the work level standpoint. Because as cliche as it sounds, and maybe as blasé as it sounds, if you can get your forwards tracking back in the back check, and if you can create havoc and get to Tampa's defensemen on the forecheck, the Avs will be better tonight, Sean. Now, one of those defensemen you're going to have to get to is Victor Hedman. And I pose this question to DMAC. Hedman lost out on the Norris Trophy to Makar. We really haven't seen Victor Hedman have an impact in this series. I can't help but wonder if last night may be a little bit of inspiration and motivation for him.
It could be. I think the concern with Hedman in this particular matchup is it's one of the few teams where the speed is a problem. You saw him on his heels at times. You saw him getting caught flat-footed. It's happened actually in all 3 of these games. It's not to say he can't be effective. I'm firmly convinced that Victor Hedman is the best defensive defenseman in the entire NHL. So I do expect him to adjust. But that's one of the things. The Avs' speed is something that the Lightning can attempt to scheme around. They simply can't match. So if you're the Avs, that's the way to handle it too. You press, you make sure you get Hedman on his heels, you want to try to turn him around, and then he can't do all the things that make him special. So could he have gotten a little bit ignited in that last game? Sure he could. But if there's anything that shows that momentum doesn't mean all that much in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's the game that you saw the Tampa Bay Lightning play in Game 3 after getting absolutely steamrolled in Game 2,
right,
and being put down 2-0 in the series. It's like it made no difference. Momentum, it sounds good. It's one of those things we talk about, that sort of nebulous concept. But in hockey, in the Stanley Cup Finals, nah. Momentum shifts with the very next sunrise. That it means nothing. What happened in Game 3 tonight doesn't mean any more than what happened in Game 2 prior to Game 3. Whole new game.
The only thing I think will carry over is the fact that Tampa has confidence in the series now and does now, to an extent, know how to slow the Avs down. As far as the actual gameplay and how this goes, I think it'll be interesting to see if Tampa adjusts themselves after Game 3. Because the Avs did start well early, and that's the thing. Is like we talk about Game 3 as well. The Avs lost 6-2 and got pounded, which, you know, they did. But at the same time, they were the better team 5-on-5 by the advanced numbers. Were they losing the forecheck? Were they losing puck battles? Absolutely. So that plays into it. Analytics doesn't always tell the story. But the truth is, Sean, is that their activity level, they outshot Tampa. Tampa blocked 27 shots, and Vasilevsky had 37 saves. So Colorado has to do a better job at creating shooting angles, right? And part of the thing I was talking about with McKinnon is sometimes I feel like his first look is to everybody else instead of just go for it like did in Game 1, where he split the double and drew the penalty. And I think sometimes he'll bring it out and wheel out to the blue line and just throw it on net, which is not a high danger opportunity, right? You want the Avs going downhill towards the net, crashing the action, and forcing some chaos in front of Vasilevsky, as we saw in Game 1, a couple of tip-ins right in front of the net. We need to see some drive-bys from Colorado's wings. So we'll see how it plays out tonight, Sean. I do think the Avs will be much, much more aggressive overall tonight. I think their work ethic is going to be night and day than what it was in game three. I did just mention before you came on that I predicted a Tampa win tonight because I know Tampa's not going away, and I know their goaltender's solid, and I also don't trust Darcy Kuemper. I have the feeling that this will be the best game in the series, so I can't wait to watch it unfold. Tons more to get into here on the Mission 16W pregame show. Matt Smith, Sean Drotar stepping in for DMAC as he makes his way over to the Amalie Arena in a quest to go find Bathroom Becky. We'll see if he's successful. More to come on The Drive. It is Matt Smith and Sean Drotar on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
From the banks of Cherry Creek to the Flatirons of Boulder to the South Stands of Mile High, he's the state of Colorado's native son. A man of mythical and physical proportion. University of Colorado Buffalo's team captain, Denver Broncos Super Bowl 50 champion. He is Mount Columbus. Who dare attempt scale the mighty Mount Columbus on this day?
And he is on vacation. Mount Columbus is presented to you by Plumline Services. Turn to the experts you trust. All right, Sean, you ready?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not the only native son.
No, he's not.
Not the only guy that went to see you. Not the only guy that went to Colorado High School. Not the only guy that's been in the South Stands. I think he meant it a different way, the big voice guy that I've been in the South Stands. But I will do my best.
All right, here's our first one. Mount Columbus Drotar. Right now, who is the leader in the clubhouse for the Conn Smythe Award?
Columbus. Speed.
It is Cale Makar. It should be Valeri Nichushkin. Cale Makar obviously coming off of the Norris Trophy win last night. Still working on that playoff beard. He's been growing it for 2 months. There's a little bit to do, but nobody can have everything, I suppose. Hmm. But in Makar's case, obviously he's been a dominant player. Wayne Gretzky called him the best player on the ice every night in the Western Conference Finals. That does carry some weight with people. As long as the play continues, and as long as the performance continues, and as long as the Avs win the cup, it's likely to be Makar. But the truth of the matter is in the first three games, consistently, the Avalanche's best player has been Valeri Nichushkin. He's been physical. He's been good on the forecheck. He's been playing a complete game. He's been opportunistic in scoring. Wherever they've needed him to be, he's been there, and he adds a physicality that the Avalanche don't particularly have in a lot of different areas. So, to my mind, Nichushkin has been the best player the Avs have had thus far. Whether it continues the whole series, I don't know. But assuming the Avs win the Cup, it'll be Cale Makar. If they don't, well, given the way that this series has gone thus far, you may see Vasilevsky take it for the Lightning. But as it stands today, Cale Makar is the favorite. Valeri Nichushkin's the guy who should get it. But even in the games he's playing well, he doesn't get into the top three stars. So, unfortunately, Choo-Choo's flying under the radar.
Mount Columbus Drotar. since you're advocating for Darcy Kuemper, what is your confidence level on a scale of 1 to 10 in the netminder as we head into game 4?
Mount Columbus. Speed.
6. It's not what anyone wants to hear. This is not a team that has particularly good goaltending. It is pedestrian at best, regardless of who it is. These guys have very different styles when you're talking about Frantzos and Kuemper. But when you're talking about overall ability, it's not that different. I think when Kemper's 100%, he's the better goaltender. On the whole, I'm not entirely convinced he's 100%, to be completely honest, but hey, I'm not a doctor. You have to trust the Avalanche for that. But I wouldn't say the confidence is high. I think that the leash is going to be short. I think that if the performance isn't better in front of Kuemper, there's a big concern that this could go haywire like it did in Game 3. They have to find a way to make sure that the guys aren't being able to camp out in the slot like they were in Game 3. But confidence level, no. Is he good enough to get the job done? Yes. By himself? Again, no. The goaltending for the Avs is not really the rest of the skaters and the goaltender. It's inseparable from the way the defense plays. The defense and the goaltending are one in the same, no matter which guy is in net. It's just the way that the two guys play stylistically. So I don't have a tremendous amount of confidence. But I think one of the things that we talked about earlier is the idea that, I think rightly so, Pavel Francouz is the backup. Pavel Francouz was here. They still went and gave up significant assets, as you pointed out, to obtain Darcy Kuemper. I think that tells you what the Avs feel about Pavel Francouz and where they feel his ceiling is. So as a result, yeah, I think Kuemper should be the guy until he proves that he shouldn't be. And that could happen. That could easily happen. Another game like last night's, in fact, it wouldn't even have to take as long, probably would do that, and you'd go to Francouz the rest of the way. But you have to look at the two things together. If the Avs' defense is better, their goaltending is better. Yes, you can say that for everybody. But unlike Tampa, who has Vasilevsky in net who can bail you out from certain mistakes, neither Kuemper nor Francouz is the kind of guy that's going to do that with any consistency or with any regularity. And that's why I think your confidence level has to be relatively low.
Yeah, Sean, I think it's interesting. I think my confidence level as far as Kuemper goes right now, it's about a 4. I got to be honest with you, but Frankie's only about a 6. And so what I take is I think I've seen some moments, Sean, where I feel like Francouz has really stopped a few shots that, in my opinion, I think Kuemper would have let through. And again, that's completely subjective. It's a total feel thing. But again, the margin is so, so thin between these two guys. They're both not the answer. The key here, Sean, is just what you said. If the Avs are going to win the Cup, they need average goaltending. The Avs become a great team with average goaltending. When you get below average goaltending, in my opinion, like we saw in Game 3, they become a very good team, right? Which is still good enough to beat a majority of other teams in the league with what they have. But the problem is, Sean, is they haven't, like you mentioned, gotten it consistently. Right. So for me, it's all about resetting for the moment. And if Darcy Kuemper's the one that's in net tonight, then you throw your full weight and full support behind him, because I know there will be people that come out. Let's say the Avs lose tonight. I know that there will be people that come out and say, well, Bednar absolutely should have started Frankie, and this is all on him. What a massive mistake this is in the postseason. They're now headed back, and Tampa has all the momentum. I'm not going to go there. I would still start Frankie, but I'm not going to crush Bednar for starting Darcy, because I understand the logic behind it. He's been your number one guy all year. Not only has he been the number one guy all year, he was better than Francouz in the regular season. My question about him is A, health, and it's B, when the pressure's on, can he handle the moment? I'm also curious to see if there isn't a little bit more feistiness with Corey Perry this evening, because I think that's something else, Sean, we haven't really spoken about, is the emotion. Kind of boiled over from the end of Game 2. Game 3 got pretty chippy and pretty physical, especially when the Avs got down. What do you see as far as emotions? Do you see emotions cooling down on their own because these two teams are focused on winning? Or do you see some of that chippiness start to build and build and build here?
Well, I think certain players, Corey Perry's of the world, are going to try to be agitators. That's just kind of who he is. And that's
made a career out of that.
Right. But for the most part, if these games are close, No, I don't think you're going to see this. These teams are not really known for being goons and knocking people around. Neither of these teams are. But when games get out of hand, obviously frustrations tend to boil over. As long as these games are close, I don't think you're going to see anything. You heard John Cooper getting caught on mic, the Lightning head coach, exhorting his guys not to get in the box. And they even had the lead because they are terrified of the Avs power play, and rightly so. I think that both of these teams understand they have to keep their emotions in check. When the game gets out of hand, those things happen. I don't think we're going to see, and I could be completely wrong, I don't think we're going to see another game get out of hand like we did in either the 7-0 or 6-2. I think these are going to be closer the rest of the way. And so I think the emotions will run hot, but they're not going to spill over into things that are going to grab you penalties.
We certainly shall see, and we're also going to see if D-Max got a chance to catch up with Bathroom Becky yet. I don't know if you caught that story, Sean, but it's a woman who stands out front of the Lightning bathrooms, and she doesn't sit down the entire time. The game's going on, and she's in the concourse standing in front of the bathroom. So if things don't go well for the Avs tonight, we're calling D-Mac down from the press box and sending him to the men's room, but we'll see if he's caught up with Becky, and we'll do that next on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
It's our Mission 16W Cup final pregame, presented by TNT Home Services. Here's the drive with Matt Smith in the Superbook.com studios and D-Mac live from the site of tonight's game, Tampa, Florida. When the sun goes down, stars
come out. Game day. Matt Smith, Sean Drotar. And now for the latest on the Colorado Avalanche, we're going to go live to Tampa.
Mission 16W update. Bring the cup home to Denver. Here's the latest on tonight's game, courtesy of Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Behind the side of Emily Motor Oil Arena here in Tampa, the Avalanche are warming up, and I'm just a few feet away from Nazem Kadri. He's on the ice right now. He's been testing his hand the entire pregame. Looks okay. Not fantastic, but looks okay. We'll see if he goes. Every indication is he will. He's got a sweater on, and unless something crazy happens or the warm-up goes real poorly, I would expect to see Nazem Kadri out on the ice for the Avalanche. Meanwhile, as expected, Darcy Kuemper will be your starting goalie tonight, as we reported earlier this morning, and he's taking all the reps with the team as well. It's a packed crowd, and I just spoke to Bathroom Becky.
Yeah.
Yes, outside of Section 106.
Where's the photo?
There's a woman who has... I'll post here right now at DMAC Radio. It'll be up in a second. There's a photo. There's an interview. She's a nut. She actually has a ticket for the game. She's not going to be sitting in her seat. She actually has a husband and a daughter. They seem normal. So there is going to be, can you imagine this, a completely wasted seat tonight while she stands next to the bathroom in Section 106. Take that, all you Avalanche fans that paid more than $1,000 for a ticket. There's somebody who's wasting that right now, standing in front of a bathroom at DMAC Radio. That will be posted in a few minutes. In terms of the Avalanche, they seem to be in good enough spirits. And like I said, Kadri's warming up with everybody else. The Kuemper's in that net. Guys, game is getting going here in a little bit. And I'll take fun of Bathroom Becky that she's wrong. If she really is the key to this series, talk about overturning a covered stone. That's it from Emily. I'll be tweeting throughout the game and live with you on the post game as well. D-Mac out.
There he is, and there he goes. Just like he was never here, gone like a demon's whisper, Sean. Just gone in the night. But he did find Bathroom Becky, and that was important. I can't wait to see it. That was D-Mac, presented to us by Superbook Sports, of course, live from Tampa. Sean, just about 15, 20 minutes here till puck drop or so. There is some news. We have some news. Early in the show today, D-Mac and I were talking about how Nazem Kadri would be used tonight. Well, it appears that we do have some information on that front. As the line rushes in the pregame skate are as follows. The first line for the Avalanche are Turi Lehkonen, Nathan MacKinnon, and Mikko Rantanen. Line number two, Gabriel Landeskog, Nazem Kadri, and Val Nichushkin. Line three, Newhook, Compher, and O'Connor. Line four, Cogliano, Sturm, and Helm. Your defense is the same. Taze and Makar, Jack Johnson, and Josh Manson. Bo Byram and Eric Johnson, and of course, Kemps is kicking in the net. First reaction to Landeskog moving down to the second line to help Kadri out with some faceoffs, which I imagine he will.
Yeah, we know that Kadri is not going to take faceoffs tonight. That makes sense.
Well, I'm not sure about that, to be honest.
They are going to try to avoid having him take faceoffs as best as possible. That you don't want to risk that potential stick to the wrist again. Landeskog can take faceoffs. Of course, Rantanen can too and has been on that line before. But that move, to me, speaks to the fact that you want two guys that are not afraid to throw their bodies into the mix. In Landeskog and Nichushkin, they'd be flanking Kadri to make sure that Kadri has a little bit of cover there. There's some physicality on that line that would have to make people think about it if they wanted to take any sort of liberties with Kadri. Otherwise, the lines aren't a surprise. In Lekkonen's case, you crank up that forecheck a little bit. We know he's been an opportunistic goal scorer. And quite frankly, Mikko Rantanen's another one of those guys that can stand to get going. Having him on McKinnon's line, I think, gives him an opportunity to hit there as well. So those line moves don't particularly surprise me. Of course, I doubt they'll remain that way for the entirety of the game, but not necessarily a shock at this stage either. With Kadri coming back, you have to give him a little bit of protection. You have to make sure that you have some guys that can be very good on the forecheck in case Kadri's stick handling is not up to par, and that wouldn't be a shock given how short it's been since his surgery.
And I love the fact that he goes back to the second line, Sean, instead of playing in some sort of diminished fourth line role. But it is going to be curious to see if that's how these lines stay throughout the course of this game. It also is going to be curious to see what kind of ice time that amounts to Nazem Kadri if they don't end up subbing him out for a shift here or a shift there, right, to keep the workload easy on him. We're going to see. And again,
what it means on the power play.
Sure.
Where Kadri has been the most impactful in this postseason has been on that power play now.
Right, he's been on power play one, though. He'll be on power play two today, no doubt about it.
I would think, yeah. So that's going to change things a little bit as well.
Well, that's how they worked him this morning. So I imagine that's what we'll see. He was in the burgundy jersey at practice. No Burakovsky, clearly. More changes in the lineup. Newhook, Compher, and O'Connor. That breaks up the threesome of Cogliano, Helm, and O'Connor. Also think that's interesting because, quite frankly, look, these guys had a really nice rapport cooking. Then Cogliano went out and they had to mix it up. So at this point, I think you play the matchup. You put Newhook and Compher with O'Connor. You keep that as more of your speed line, right? And Cogliano, Sturm, and Helm is your greasy line. Sean, thanks for hopping on for the last hour and kicking this pregame in.
I'll be back on the postgame, too, as soon as the game finishes. Bet River Sportsbook presents that fan's postgame show. I'll be on that with Sandy Clough at the Final Horn.
No doubt about it. Today, in my opinion, there's only one person to give the game puck to today, and that's Nazem Kadri. 2.5 weeks after surgery on that right thumb, that's not going to keep him out of the Stanley Cup final and fighting with the boys. He's back in the room. That's going to provide some good energy. They're going to see him back out in the ice, know what he's been through, know what he's fighting through to help this team achieve their ultimate goal. Big props to you, Naz. Game puck, game four, about to drop. Orlando and Cecil coming up next. It's The Drive on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Out to pasture, think it's safe to say. Time to open fire. And we don't need the lead.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.